Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
And welcome to Adventures in History. I'm Alana Quila with Providence Seaside Hospital, here today with Mac Burns, the Executive Director of the Clatsop County Historical Society.
And see, normally I would say the best historical society in all the county.
Right.
All the land.
But you're not going to today.
But I'm not going to say that today, because we have a representative, the Executive Director of the Cannon Beach Historical Society. Did I say that right?
Yes, you did.
Because awesome. I always, sometimes there's like the museum in there, because I've worked someplace where it was the museum and historical society.
Yes.
But you are just the Cannon Beach Historical Society.
Well, we're also the Cannon Beach History Center and Museum, but that's so long. So Cannon Beach Historical Society works just as well.
And you're a friend of the show. You've been on
yes.
a previous incarnation.
Yes.
So we're glad you're here.
Thanks
so
for
you,
having
you know,
me.
You know the drill. Wait, did you say your name?
Oh, my name is Elaine Truckee. I'm the director of the Cannon Beach Historical Society.
For how many years now?
Over 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, I was thinking it was like 7 or 8.
Full on over a decade of my life.
That's a little frightening, isn't it?
It is.
When you hit that point where you're just like, oh my gosh, I've spent a quarter of my life or a third of my life.
Yeah.
It's a little disturbing.
Yeah.
Or really good. And thank you for being here today for our best show of the year.
It is going to be the best show. So let's get right to it. We've
got
the big history highlights, things that you can brag about that you know. And these are for tomorrow, not today, tomorrow.
Monday.
Mm-hmm. And we made the big change last week. And I got nice compliments about it. I've already had feedback.
Good.
I don't know if anybody won bar fights or if they appeared on trivia, on some trivia show or what. But they were very thankful.
Mac thinks a lot of our listeners go to bars the next day.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah. So
do they go to work?
Yeah.
Or maybe in the Zoom conference, you sound really smart.
There you go. Yeah, that's true.
So here it is. This is for tomorrow, the history highlights for January 18th, 1644. Perplexed pilgrims in Boston reported America's first UFO sighting. UFOs.
Oh,
UFO.
Oh, did I just say USO?
Yes.
You did.
Oh, how confusing.
Yes. First, I looked at Elaine.
Take two, UFO.
First unidentified flying object.
Yes.
Nice.
And it actually ties into a ghost story, because the lights appeared where a ship had just wrecked.
Ooh.
Oh.
And it appeared like a little bit later, and they swear, some of the people that saw it swore that it was like the image of people in boats.
Oh, see, I love stories like that.
So it's a ghost and a
yes.
UFO. That's why I was confused for a moment. Okay, that was 1644, 1733. The first polar bear exhibited in North America is in Boston.
Oh, how fun.
Boston's like getting all this stuff today.
Oh, my gosh.
The first polar bear, though, was a 9-month-old cub that had been caught in Greenland.
Yeah, pretty sweet.
I think polar bears are my favorite bear.
Yeah. We're getting a big polar bear exhibit at the Oregon Zoo.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And your choice for bears?
Oh. Well, sure.
Yeah. Don't have a favorite bear?
As long as I don't see them in person.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. I was like, I've seen polar bear damage to the Arctic cars and vehicles and their claws. And I'm like, I guess. Something small.
Teddy bear. How about a teddy bear?
When they're little, when they're cubs, that's any age bear. Okay. Moving along. 1778. Captain Cook reaches Hawaii, and he names them the Sandwich Islands because apparently he was hungry.
Oh, my God.
I saw that one. I liked that.
And, of course, he comes up here.
Yeah.
Captain Cook. He comes up here looking for the great trail of water through the continent.
Yes.
This was not the visit where he gets killed. 1778, which is funny because he does get killed there on his second or third return. And it actually becomes a tourist thing that like people sailing there in the future, the islanders are all like, oh, let's show you where we killed Cook.
Yeah.
All right. 1862, President John Tyler dies. He was the vice president to William Henry Harrison, who died in office only a month into the presidency. And then he becomes the president, but 1862 he dies, and he's just been elected to the Confederate Congress.
Oh.
Former president. He's going to join the Confederacy.
Wow.
That's no good. 1974, The $6 Million Man, starring Lee Majors, premieres on ABC TV.
Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology.
You're both too young for that show, aren't you?
I watched the reruns of it. I had insomnia as a kid, so I watched The Million Dollar Man and the female version.
The Bionic Woman.
The Bionic Woman, the original Linda Carter, Wonder Woman, all that stuff.
Nice.
Good stuff.
It was a great show right up until there's a two-parter where he fights Bigfoot. And Bigfoot, it turns out, is a robot from space.
Yes.
And then it just got stupid.
Oh, I forgot about it. I think I blacked that episode out. That was so cheesy. That's right.
Up to that point, it was great.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Moving along. 1990. Washington, D.C. Mayor Marion Barry is arrested on drug charges. Insert your own joke here. We don't do politics. But our history highlight of the day, 1803. President Jefferson requests funding for the Lewis and Clark expedition.
Yeah.
Guess how much he asked for?
$2,500. Oh, wow.
Wow.
And you know, we laugh about that now. Yes. But that's a huge, huge amount.
And he obviously got it.
And he obviously got it.
Right.
So that is our history highlight day, the thing that I think had the most impact on all of local history and all of national history. Did I miss any?
Well, you did miss one I thought that was good. 1948, Gandhi breaks a 121-hour fast after halting the Muslim-Hindu riots.
Wow, way to go, Gandhi.
121 hours. And this was not a big, large man that had a lot of extra, you know.
Well, a little extra to lose.
Right. Yeah. 121 hours. So that's good. Also, I thought 1964, plans are disclosed for the World Trade Center in New York.
Ooh.
So 1964. Wow. And then 1978, the Centers for Disease Control isolate the cause of Legionnaire's disease. I just thought that was kind of timely because, I mean, in 78, so they're isolating the cause of the disease. So.
You know, ever since this pandemic thing started, I've been reading all about the Spanish flu. And I was going to give a talk on it last April, and then it got canceled.
I remember.
But it is kind of amazing what we didn't know before 1918 and then what they learned. And I am not a smart guy. I'm an historian. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a medical doctor. And it's just amazing how fast they can figure things out.
Yeah.
Don't know what that soapbox was about, but it is pretty amazing.
You've got to speed it up now.
Legionnaire's disease.
So. Yes.
I think it's pretty incredible that the first guy to really talk about the idea of germs, like these invisible things, and we should just try to wash our hands, is like committed, and he like dies in an insane asylum because they're like invisible tiny things. You silly man. And now we're like, oh. Yeah, of course. That makes a lot of sense.
It seems so obvious. Yes. And yet, you know, this first guy, they yeah. What are you talking about?
Yeah. You're crazy.
Poor guy.
Well, that's like one of my favorite presidents, Garfield. And he gets shot, of course, and the bullet's in him, and all these doctors try to help him, and none of them are washing their hands. And that's what really kills him. It's because they're doing surgery and they're digging in. And, you know, almost having a cigarette on the side kind of deal.
Yeah.
And had we just had some little iota of understanding at that point, maybe they pull the bullet out and he survives.
Right.
So, but we're not here to talk about Garfield.
Or pandemics.
Well, we kind of are.
Oh, okay.
Because like my organization and like so many businesses, so many individuals, you've been hit hard.
Yes. Yeah. We've been closed since March 13th. We closed a couple days earlier than we had to because we had a really weird interaction with someone who came in and they were like, oh, we were supposed to be quarantining. We decided to just we were bored. We decided to go to the coast. And, you know, they're talking and the museum's full of people. And I just was like, I don't know what his definition of quarantine was. Was he exposed? Does he have it? Like, is he just someone who knows? And I just told, you know, I called my board members and was like, this is what happened. And they said, you know, just shut it down because we were already in discussions of closing. So it was kind of moving in that direction. But when we closed, we thought, okay, well, we're going to be closed a couple weeks, maybe a month. And now it's like, when are we going to have the funding to open? Because our annual fundraiser, you know, it's a home tour and we're touring like 400 square foot historic cottages. We had homeowners dropping out, volunteers dropping out, just scared. and we couldn't do it. And so we're like, oh, wow, that's a huge portion of our annual income. We're not going to see, you know, I'm going for every funding that, you know, you could possibly do. But it's still like, it's just me and my colleague both now, we're both part-time and we're just kind of trucking along. But it, yeah, this, as everyone says, it's unprecedented. We're all just kind of learning and we're all pivoting to, okay, what can we do? How can we hustle? How can we talk to our community? How can we, you know, still be relevant to the people who live in the area and to our members and our sponsors? Like, how are we going to do that? And we're doing the best we can, but it's definitely been a learning lesson.
So where does your funding come from?
So our funding predominantly comes from memberships and sponsorships. And then we do, you know, grant writing and we do our fundraiser. And that's the Cottage Tour, and we didn't do it. So not having that funding coming in was a big hit. And we had already, because we were kind of hoping it was going to happen, we'd already had a bunch of expenses related to it that we had to kind of go, I guess that's what we're eating that. No. And that was, you know, that's a tough thing. And then we have so many people travel for the Cottage Tour, and we have people who come from out of state who are like, you know, are we going to do it? Or do we need to come? And I'm thinking, oh my God, you know, you're coming from a state that's got really high cases.
We don't want you to come. We don't want necessarily.
I mean, we stay home. Yeah. And
just send us the check.
Yes. Like you can become a member, whatever. It's just, yeah, it's been
virtual tour.
we worked on a virtual tour. Problem was we couldn't get into a lot of the houses because some of the homeowners were out of state. So we had two locations. We could have done that, but we didn't have the skill set to kind of create these, you know, like realtor level photographs with history. So we created a history map. It took us so long to do because it's like we're communicating, we're Zooming, we're calling people, and then we finally release it, and one of the locations, the owner tore it down.
Oh.
Just as we're about to release it. And so we're like, do we take it down? Do we?
Oh, my goodness.
But we did do, like, a historic digital walking map that has all these locations in Cannon Beach and Arch Cape. And that was really fun to create. But then now we're like, okay, well, they took this house down. What are we going to do for that? But I think this 2021 tour is going to be digital, and if it is safe to do in person as well with limited ticket purchases. But
yeah, I think that's part of the problem that anybody with a public events calendar is dealing with, is that, okay, how much lead time do I need to actually do this event?
Yes.
And am I going to be able to do it? And when do I start planning, or when do I start canceling it?
Right.
And, you know, I mean, as my historical society, we've got events all the time.
Yes.
And I've already canceled February, but I'm thinking, well, May, is May going to be okay to do something? Is October going to be okay to do something? And
yes.
You've got the Homes Tour in September, of course.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
And to me, that's right on the cusp of we may be able to do it, but
exactly.
Maybe not.
And when we like start planning, we start the year before, and so we're kind of like moving forward to kind of do that. And then, you know, we also do like an off-season lecture series for people. Mm-hmm. And we did create digital content for that. We had that online. And it was so hard because there's so much tech and you need to learn different software. Like, you know, there's GoToMeeting, and then this guy uses Zoom, and then this other guy is using this other random one. And
they all think their program is the best.
It's the best. And it's every single one. It's like, okay, all right.
So let's back up a little bit because we jumped the gun. Although right off, because I want to let you say it at least two or three times. If somebody wanted to donate.
Yes.
Because you're closed. How would they do that?
They can actually donate right on our website. They just go to our gift shop and they can make a donation. They can become a member. We are doing an e-newsletter every other week, and I write an article, and that's information and photos you're not going to see anywhere else. And so they will get that every other week, and we just kind of try to share stuff with people. And
what is that website?
It's www.cbhistory.org. So CannonBeachHistory.org.
Excellent. So back up, because even though you've been on the show before, people may not know who you are. So you've been at the museum for 10 years. How did you get into history, and how did you get into professional history?
Oh, man. Well, I wanted to be an Egyptologist when I was in fourth grade. And I went to all these like seminars, and I was that weird little, like, the youngest kid at these things where people are like, whose kid is this? And I'm like, can you tell me more about Akhenaten? And they're like, oh, very weird child, sure. And as I got older and I started realizing, you know, ancient Egypt is an actual country that like has policies and political stuff going on. And I came from a very poor family. So I was like, well, I'm going to go into the army. And then, you know, I'll do that for a while, pay for some college. And then I ended up going to Portland State University and thought, okay, maybe I'm going to stay local, keep it in the Pacific Northwest. And one of the board members at the Historical Society knew I was going to school and that I was interested in doing museum studies. And they said, hey, do you want to come work here? And so I ended up transferring from Portland State University to Eastern Oregon University so I could do anthropology, sociology, and museum studies while I was kind of working part-time at the museum. And then it just eventually just kind of, I became the director, and it's always been a small organization. It was either me by myself or me and like a part-time person. And I just have loved history since I was a kid. And so this has been really fun, and also to be back in the community I grew up in and then my husband grew up in. So we both get to be around our families.
That's so nice. So have you been to Egypt?
Not yet. It's kind of on my, it's on my when I'm a lot older list to do. I traveled when I was younger and I had a lot of like, you know, maybe I need to be a little older to really enjoy this and not be accosted at places. And it also like, you know, where I'm going and who I'm with and how much alcohol is being consumed in my 20s. But I was like, you know, when I'm older, I think I'm just going to go and just do it really safely. And I've worked with a lot of my teachers who work over there. And some of my friends just did a show on National Geographic for the work they're doing there. And I think it's really exciting. So I kind of just live vicariously through them and just be safe about it. I've gone to a lot of other places. And that's kind of the very last place, the cusp.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Yeah.
So if somebody has not visited your museum.
Yes.
When it's open, right. What am I going to find?
Well, we have the cannon that Cannon Beach is actually named for. It was off of the USS Shark that wrecked at the mouth of the Columbia River in 1846. And the cannon kind of washed in and out a bit before it was finally found in 1898 and pulled up and was in Arch Cape. And then it actually came here for a long time. And then when we got a building and we kind of constructed everything, the Clatsop County Historical Society was like, okay, you can have this back because it's very small, but it weighs over a ton. So you've got a lot of weight in a small area. And I know that when it was in this old, the building here, it was kind of a concern, like, is it going to fall through the floor? And we had to build like concrete slabs in our building just to hold the weight of the cannon. So that's on display. We also have all of the history of Cannon Beach and Arch Cape. And we talk about World War II on the Oregon coast. And we do temporary exhibits, art exhibits, and events that are really fun. We have a really cool replica longhouse exhibit that we did with the Clatsop Nehalem tribes. And our last exhibit was the shipwreck exhibit. And we were going to release this big storms exhibit like right before. So the shipwreck exhibit's still up because we can't really take the artifacts back to some of the places that we've been because they're not open. So we're just kind of, we get to enjoy it by ourselves alone, crying and looking at the exhibit.
Well, that just is sad.
It is sad. Again, a website to donate to,
cbhistory.org.
Yes, to stop those tears.
since we're all sad now, we're going to take a little break. We're going to pull ourselves together, and then we'll be right back.
January 1926, you're invited in. The tempting baked goods in our show windows are only a promise of the big variety of delicious things inside. Here you will find a complete variety of baked goods, everything from tender, tempting bread to the fanciest of pastries. Individual attention given to special orders. Morrow's Bakery, phone 495.
January 15th, 1884.
dinner at Jeff's Chop House every day from 4:30 to 8 o'clock. The best 25-cent meal in town. Soup, fish, 7 kinds of meats, vegetables, pies, pudding, etc. A glass of San Francisco beer, French claret, tea, or coffee included. All who have tried him say Jeff is the boss. And welcome back to Adventures in History. I'm Alana Quila, here today with Mac Burns. And our very special guest drove up from the South, from the Cannon Beach Historical Society. Elaine, welcome. Thank you for being here with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So you work social media pretty well for a museum, I think.
Yes.
You want to talk a little bit about that?
Oh, man, the social media. It's a love-hate relationship that I think we all have with social media. But I have been very impressed with the response from people who have followed. So I think we were about 4,000 people when this started, 4,000 followers on our Facebook, Instagram. I can't even remember what it was, but now we're close to 6,000 people. And I just love the conversations that I get to have with a lot of the people who are interested in the history. And, you know, I can ask questions, like if I have a picture, and then I've been able to connect with a lot of people. But yeah, we post. We try not to do too much and inundate people with too much information. So we do 2 to 3 posts a week, and we'll share photos. And recently we've been doing a decade of time. So like Cannon Beach in 1910, Cannon Beach in 1920, 30, 40, and kind of moving forward. And that's been really fun because I got to have a conversation with people like, how do we date photos? Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, how do you know that's from this time? And it's like, well, we look at all, you know, the cars and the body shape and the style of the car. And I'll talk to people who are vintage car experts, and I'll talk to people who are fashion designers who maybe will say, okay, that kind of fabric or that print didn't come around till such and such time, or like what kind of shoes they're wearing. Or I'll even look at, you know, the sign and the font on the sign, like, okay, that looks like really something that was popular in the 1920s or something. And I just had a conversation with a lady about neon. Mm-hmm. And the golden era of neon was really the 1940s and 50s, but it was around in the 1920s. So the 1920s on, and then it kind of became unfashionable as other lighting sources became more available. But in her head, she was envisioning like the neon wasn't around until like 1990.
Oh gosh.
And I was like, well, 1990, actually, I think we were using other things about that time. But I mean, there's still neon around, and there's a lot of people who are neon enthusiasts. And I had actually talked to someone who like restores neon signs to look at this particular photo. And it was just kind of fun to be able to say random knowledge that I will never, ever use in my real life. Here it is. Let's talk about it.
Suddenly I'm an expert on neon lights.
Yes.
And the time periods. So people may think of Cannon Beach as this wonderful arts community. Mm-hmm. And a tourist attraction, and Haystack Rock and the Goonies, of course, and
yes,
Terrible Tilly. But what? Tell us like some of the early history, and how did this community get started? And it's not just those things. There's a lot more to it.
Yeah, it was kind of a bit more. It was far more rugged, secluded. It was the farthest south that Lewis and Clark came when they were here. It was like early 1806. They made their way down to Cannon Beach, which was Nacoos. And they, you know, bartered for whale. And a Lewis and Clark expedition just posted on this day in 1806, the Lewis and Clark expedition went this far. And then people started kind of settling in the mid to late 1800s. And the first hotel built in Cannon Beach was built by a remittance man, which is in Britain. You've got, you know, these lords and ladies, and they will inherit the firstborn son. And those that didn't inherit were usually given a remittance or like an allowance and said, okay, bye, have fun. And so those people, a lot of them ended up in Cannon Beach, which is why there's like this British kind of feel to a lot of the cottages and theme. So he was really, this guy Herbert Logan was really a great entrepreneur and eccentric, and he marketed Cannon Beach as a place for respite and rest. And he would like have tea time on the beach with all his silver that he got when his family was like, bye-bye, here you go, here's some silver. So he would kind of do that. And so that was the Elk Creek Inn or Elk Creek Hotel, and that was built in 1892. And then it just kind of, 1910, it was like, you know, another hotel. And then 1920s, it was hotels, businesses, the Natatorium, the Duck Pin Cafe, the Waves Roller Rink. Like a lot of these places started opening because it was big summer. People were coming from the summer times. Transportation got a little easier. They weren't having to take this crazy ferry ride from Washington. They were taking the train from Portland down to Astoria and then going by wagon or horseback to Cannon Beach, so it became a lot more accessible. And then, of course, there were people who were, you know, kind of starting to log, and it was not just like a tourist town. There was the logging industry. There was people fishing. There was a lot of tribal elements to that, too, in the area, like that they were still around. But, yeah, there, it just really, the 1920s really started to grow, and then it kind of, 1940s, World War II, everybody kind of stopped for a bit, even though things still got built. And then after World War II, it was like the highway, you know, Highway 101. And, you know, they were working on it pre-World War II, but I think it wasn't until post-World War II that it was all the way down the coast. Like, I want to say like 1946, but it was like the Arch Cape Tunnel. That took a really long time. Like, they thought it was going to be done in the 30s, and I think it was done exactly 1940, because it was just, oh, this is taking a lot longer. This is a lot harder to build than we thought. And I think about now when you do see construction and they're like, yeah, it'll take a month. And it's like 6 months. You know, I think even back then they were like, yeah, it'll take a year or 2 years. And it's like, no, it's going to take 5, 6, 7.
And a lot of times tunnels like that, I think, why didn't they just go around it? But that's one that I totally understand.
Yes.
I'm like, yeah, there's no going around.
The pictures of going around that were it was basically like just boards sticking off the mountain, and they were like, good luck, everybody. And people were going around it because ideally you would take the beach, but if the tide wasn't right, there was trails, and then there was kind of boardwalk. And, you know, there's that mail carrier, Mary Greetsey, and she talks about how, you know, people you could just fall right off. And in fact, she fell off her horse, and her horse saved her, pulled her back up the trail, because she had the mail bag on her and it got caught on the saddle horn. And the horse was able to pull her back up, but otherwise she would have just ended up right down the mountain. And I just think about the few times that, you know, I hike nowadays, it's like, it's still kind of hairy around up on those trails.
Yeah.
Well, you've done tons of things there, and it's been an amazing 10-year, and you're a fantastic ambassador for your organization. And I think you're doing really great and amazing things down there. We didn't even really get into a ton of your homes tour, which is one of the reasons we stopped doing ours, because yours was so well done and so huge and so fantastic. Once again, how could people support you? Because your organization is worthwhile and should be supported.
You know, they can just go right to our website. It's CB, as in Cannon Beach, history.org. You just go to our gift shop. You can buy something, or you can make a donation. You can purchase a membership, and you can start getting our e-newsletters. And, you know, when we open, that also gets you discounts and stuff as well.
That's great. Thank you so much for being with us here today, Elaine. We're glad to have you here, and we'll have you back again sometime soon.
Definitely.
All right. Go make some history.
We'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.